Welcome to Table Talks with Kay Woodward. Married for more than 43 years, Kay and her husband Galen have three married sons, nine grandchildren, and are longtime pastors in Albuquerque, New Mexico. With the recent release of her new cookbook, which is filled with treasured recipes and stories, she's excited to bring you into her world of faith and family. So, take a seat at the table with Kay as she welcomes special guests from varied backgrounds and stages of life to dive into relevant and important topics of today. Please enjoy today's episode.
On today's episode of Table Talks, I'm joined by Dr. Heather Cadell. She's an OBGYN based in San Antonio, Texas. She is committed to women's health, and she's married to Brent Cadell, and he is pastor of Pearl Street Church, also in San Antonio, Texas. They are both actively involved in their community. I'm really excited about this podcast today. Join us as we talk about all things women's health. So today, I'm so glad that you've joined me, Heather. She's actually Dr. Heather Cadell, and become a friend of our families over the last decade. And I'm so happy to have you on the podcast today. I really feel honored because she is an OBGYN, and Heather is married to Pastor Brent Cadell, and they help lead an amazing church in San Antonio. And all the place you spend. So when someone's an OBGYN too, and you deliver babies, you're not just a GYN, you deliver babies all the time too. So, and you have two little girls that are 8 and 5. So you're busy. And we're going to talk about so much today, but one thing that, just every time I've met you, I mean, you're just a dear person too. You're just a kind, kind person. And I've always felt drawn to you. And then we also share something that no one really wants to share. We both lost our moms to Alzheimer's. And so I think that's why I just felt even more connected this last year, because it's a path that's, you know, some people, if you've not walked it, it's really difficult to understand.
Absolutely.
So welcome to Table Talks. I'm so glad you're on here. And so just tell us a little bit about yourself. I just gave a brief overview, but give us a better bird's eye view of your life.
Yeah. I mean, I feel honored to even get to talk with you. So you remind me a lot of my mom, actually. So it's a fun, you know, comforting thing as well. So we're in San Antonio, Texas, and my husband has known your son, Pastor Dustin, for, 15 years or so when they were in youth ministry. And they've always just been great connected friends. And so that's how we kind of connected. And so we have a church here in San Antonio. My husband is fourth generation pastor. So his dad has a church here, and then two of his other brothers, he's one of four. And then we were born and raised here. We met in seventh grade. I walked into a brand new school, seventh grade. I sat across from him and I went home. And I told my mom, I met the boy I'm going to marry. I don't know his name.
Oh, you did? I didn't know that.
Yeah. So, and she very quickly was like, and you're going back to Catholic private school, but
right away
tomorrow. So no, but we honestly, that was like the end of our story. And we got married right after college, went straight into medical school, stayed in San Antonio so that we could be close to family. And he was going into ministry at that time while, you know, working a little bit bivocationally at the time. And so, yeah. And then it's kind of history. I became an OB-GYN. I'm in a private practice here in town. I'm one of the managing partners. And we have two little girls, 5 and 8, that obviously are the joy of our lives. They're actually with grandparents today. So I get to actually focus, but I get to talk about them and actually miss them as opposed to.
So it feels endearing when you talk about it.
I'm like, I actually really miss them. I need a picture. So, so we're busy. It's fun. We like to travel. And you know, podcast is not the normal thing that I do on a Friday, but I'm really excited to be a part of it.
You know, and the church where you guys are at, Pearl Street Church, wow. And it's growing so fast. You just got a new building, you have a new location, and to all the other plates you're spinning, this church is just exploding.
Yeah.
Growth. So that takes, it's taxing on your family for sure. I know that because I walked it.
Yeah, we just hit our 10-year anniversary, and we just moved into a new building that we own finally, and just remodeled about 30,000 square feet of. And it's been, it's the funniest thing. You know, you walk in and I don't remember our old building, and it's only been 4 months. But we've already kind of outgrown it like you do. So we're expanding.
And you're like, I don't want to think any further. We got to that point. I'm tired, and I know.
We got to two services and I was like, this is great. We're going to have this for a couple of months, and we're going back to four this weekend, actually. So it's just, you know, it is what it is, but it's,
you know,
great.
But the cool thing is that you both, you're both in careers and passions. Your jobs are passions of yours, and you love Jesus and you love the church. And so you get to do that, but, and your husband gets to have that fulfillment, but you get to, be that special person to women, which, you know, when we have babies, I have three sons, you know that. And, I think I had all three of them. Does everybody want to tell you their birth story? I won't hear, but I bet they do.
I love it. It's fine.
But it wasn't in style 35, 38, and 40 years ago to have an epidural. You just went ahead. And my friends had theirs with nothing. I thought, that's what you're supposed to do. I would never do that again. I would and say, medication, please. But I don't need any bad, you know, any bad comments about that. But anyway, it's crazy. How we get attached to this person that walks through, you know, the best times of our lives, and also the hard times in women's lives, couples' lives that you walk through with them, I'm sure.
Yeah. It's definitely part of what attracted me to OB-GYN was the first part was only having to take care of women. Because that's a, men are a whole other ball of.
Yes.
So I love that.
They're easier.
I love having this, you know, cross-generational part. I literally have patients who are the grandparents of the daughter who's now their daughter or their granddaughter, you know, is pregnant. And it's just the coolest thing to be a part of it. And you get to be in such different stages of life. But you're right. 99% of what I do is really happy, and it's the best days of our life. And then the other 1% is really hard. And you bond with people and patients. And I always, when I have students follow me, I always tell them OB-GYN's a really unique, field. You have to meet somebody and make them feel comfortable within about 5 minutes, enough to take all their clothes off. So it's, it takes a skin.
Listen, if this weren't being recorded, I could chat all day with you.
I know.
I don't have a filter, and the older I get, my filter just gets thinner, more thin. And I just say whatever I think. So I'll try to, I said, tell my husband today, I'm going to mind my manners and stay on target, because I could really talk on this podcast. Cause I just, one day we'll sit together when we're in person. We do see each other both times a year. So I just going to pick your brain. I want to hear all the stories, but I had this idea when I asked you to be on Table Talks, because we've talked about so many things already, in the 4 months of this podcast existence, but just everything, anything you do talk about around the table, that's kind of what we chat about. And, I don't know a group of women that doesn't get together when they get together that don't talk about hormones or how they feel or hot flashes, or now they're cold. They used to be hot. Or, you know, I was made fun of so long by my friends that are 10 and 15 years younger than me, when I would burst into a hot flash and my ears would be red and I would start sweating, and they would laugh at me. So now I'm past that, and they're all flashing and just sweating everywhere. And I'm cold all the time because you get older, and it's the whole thing. So this is just definitely a conversation that women have. But as I feel, if you're a fella and you're watching this, don't turn it off, because if you think you'll ever be around a woman, if you have a sister or a mom, or you might get married, or you are married, or a daughter, you need to listen in on our chat, because I think we're going to have fun. I looked up a definition. I bet you have a good one, but I Googled hormones, because I thought, what does Google say about hormones? So here's the definition. You tell me how close it is. And I'm going to read it. It says, hormones serve as essential messengers in the body, orchestrating key processes and adapting to changing needs across the lifespan. So I said to a young lady I was talking to the other day, I said, well, hormones, you can't live without them, and you can't live with them, and you just have to do it, you know? So we're just going to jump in. I picked this topic because it just, you know, you little girls, teenage girls, you get married, young adult, and then you get older. It changes so much. And, you know, I know that for me, when just going through menopause, I thought I was going crazy.
Yeah.
Because of that hormonal change. But let's talk about it. So let's talk about first, maybe some of the most significant hormonal changes women face. Give us key places in life, key times in life.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, I always, it's the stages, right? It's stages and seasons, and they each have a purpose. And so obviously there's the teenage years, puberty, when basically hormones kind of take off, and then it's kind of a, you know, a little mountain or a hill. And at the end, you know, menopause comes in. And I think it's so hard. And what's so frustrating about hormones for so many people and women and us as well is it's so hard to understand because everybody reacts completely differently. You know, you have two teenagers who never, one has PMS awful and one never has PMS, and one has, you know, no acne and one does. And then you have the same thing with menopause. You have women, I just saw two or three women yesterday who I was like, okay, you're officially in menopause. You know, you're there, you're over the hill. And they were like, are you kidding? I feel fine. I've never had a hot flash. And I'm like, don't tell your friends. Exactly. Because that does happen also. And so we don't understand why does one person feel it and one person doesn't. And so, you know, there's not a perfect test for everything, but yeah, I definitely think obviously our teen years, our hormones, the signals coming from our brain to tell our ovaries basically to make an egg, that axis, it's called the HPO axis, hypothalamic pituitary ovarian axis. When that is maturing, there's a lot of immaturity that's happening and it's trying to basically get in sync with itself. And our 20s and 30s, it kind of hits stride and, you know, everything is working in sync for the most part. And then we hit the 40s and it's like teenage years all over again, but for an opposite reason. You get the mood swings back and you can get the irregularities back. And so I think those are probably the two most critical times outside of course, pregnancy.
And, you know, it's interesting that something we call the hormone, you know, just that word, mm-hmm. It bugs me when people say, well, they're just hormonal. That just sends me over. Yes. Because I'm like, you don't understand if you haven't walked the journey, but it affects so many things, like, you know, just our physical well-being, our mental well-being, our, you know, spiritual well-being, because it's like, and you can't just will it away.
Correct.
You know, you think you can just get up in a better mood or tomorrow I won't feel this way.
Right. Yeah. There's, you know, there's biochemical things that are happening. And, you know, obviously we're talking about female hormones for the most part. There's other hormones in our body, like thyroid, of course. And if you just take thyroid as an example, it literally affects every organ system in your body, from your hair to your skin, to your digestive system, to, you know, every little piece, your metabolism. And so female hormones do also. And so there's effects on our serotonin levels. And that's why we get a little moody around our periods, for example. It's that hormone flux that happens. That's a natural part of the cycle. When we make an egg and our progesterone levels are changing and dropping, that drops our serotonin levels. And again, we don't know why does some people feel that more intensely than others. Some people get digestive changes. With their periods as well. We call them the period poops. some people have diarrhea with their periods and some people get constipated. And so it affects not just the brain or not just because you're cramping and you're having a period, but
it affects your poop.
It affects your poop. So, right. Yeah. So it really is something you have no control over. And it's a beautiful thing. Obviously God made us this way. And it's what makes us so unique from men, and both in, it's just makes it frustrating to hard for them to understand, but also for us, because it is something you have no control over. I mean, you want to embrace it, but it is sometimes, interrupting to your day-to-day life.
I have, you know, all of that. I'm thinking through the testing. So let's go back a minute to thyroid, because yeah. I was just talking to a friend of mine who's many years younger than me. We're talking about thyroid, and my hypothyroidism went undetected for years because yeah. the test that was run was just the basic test. And so it kept saying it was okay. And I thought, I know it. I feel like I'm a bit of a self-proclaimed doctor. You know, I tell people I'm somewhat of a doctor, but I have 63 years of mother and grandma experience now. But I kept saying to my doctor, I feel like I have low thyroid. And never came up, no, you're fine. And then she would say, I was depressed probably and just needed an antidepressant again. I had been depressed before. So yeah. I knew depression and I knew that wasn't it. Anyway, we finally got the next level of testing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, my thyroid was so low. And once we got that straightened out, that was a help right there. So wonder why we just, the first level of testing is the go-to and then.
Yeah. You know, the endocrinologists have a very specific take on that. And I won't even attempt to claim I know everything, but a lot of times I'm assuming it's a TSH that's commonly run. And there are some other things that can be going on in the background. What's hard about it, Hashimoto's, is that I'm assuming yes. maybe what you were diagnosed with. So Hashimoto's is the common one that people feel like something is off and their thyroid levels are normal. The way I think about it is what's hard about Hashimoto's is it's autoimmune. And so how it's tested and confirmed is with antibodies. So what's difficult is your thyroid levels can be very normal with Hashimoto's, but your antibodies can be off the charts. And what we don't understand is why and how that influences how you feel. Again, because your hormone, the levels will be normal, but you can feel poorly. So what's hard about it is that correcting with thyroid hormone doesn't necessarily fix Hashimoto's or fix how someone changes. The number of patients I have who start a thyroid medication with Hashimoto's and their thyroid levels are normal. And they go, I don't feel any different. It's commonly because of the antibodies. And so this is where diet and all the other parts of our body that we don't understand fully start coming in, but there's a Hashimoto's diet and it tends to be all the inflammatory food groups that you basically have to avoid, all the fun stuff.
Gluten. Yes, I'll say my doctor, they first said yeah. that, but yeah, no. So what's the other?
And eventually it flips. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Eventually it does start to affect the thyroid levels too. And so, but that's why it goes undetected for so long. But again, it's the same as the female hormones. Why does one woman have hot flashes and one woman doesn't? One person can have Hashimoto antibodies at a really low level and still feel awful. And others can have them high and feel okay. We don't know enough, I think, is part of the answer.
I think it's because you can tell me, we know people's business more because of social media and we can, sure. We also can get on Google ourselves and try to, you know, diagnose, but it okay. seems like that the whole, insulin resistance thing too, mm-hmm. is, I'm probably, it's always, you know, been a thing, but it feels right. like it's getting to be more of a thing. And then we all can talk about it more now. And we tell each other on social media what we have, but it seems like it's younger and younger women mm-hmm. are, you know, the PCOS or whatever, I think that's what you call it. But it feels like yeah. every young woman I talk to has the, you know, ovarian cysts and they have, they're insulin resistant and they're just trying to, you know, have a baby or they're trying to get, you know, a regular cycle or whatever. And it feels like it's just so much.
Yeah, I think this is another, I think our diets, you know, end up being a huge part of this. Our diets are different than they were 50 years ago. Just, you know, how our food is grown, hormones in our food. I think that's another area that we don't fully understand the impact of it. But honestly, obesity in our country is also higher. So in our adipose tissue or fat cells, it inappropriately converts hormones in our body that are not meant to be estrogen into estrogen. And that's kind of the definition of PCOS is they've got this excess estrogen imbalance. And that oftentimes comes from our adipose tissue. We have patients who have what I call skinny PCOS that aren't overweight and they have just elevated testosterone levels. And that's a whole other kind of conversation. But we have to, I think, even our patients who don't have PCOS, a lot of us see more insulin resistance in general because of our diets. And this is where macros come in, especially for women after the age of 35, protein becomes critical. You talk to any bodybuilder, CrossFit, and they start understanding the importance of protein because they're lifting, they're trying to build muscle. So there's you know, the frustrating weight part that hits around 30, 35. It's all a snowball effect. When we're pregnant, we lose muscle mass and you go from one pregnancy and then, you know, possibly breastfeeding for a year and then you're pregnant 6 months later and then the cycle starts over and you end up 6 years later with maybe the same weight or size that you were when you were before you got pregnant the first time, but your body composition is totally different. We don't have as much of that muscle. And muscle is what drives our metabolism. So, and then there's this depressing statistic about women after the age of 30 to 35, our body mass in terms of muscle mass drops about 5 to 8% every 5 to 10 years. And that's just if we're maintaining. And so if you take, it's the frustrating thing, right? My husband and I'll be like, I'm going on a diet, right? I'm going to try to lose weight. And he'll say the same thing and he loses 5 pounds the next day. He just says he wants to lose 5 pounds and he does. And it takes me 6 months.
I don't drink soda for 2 days.
Right. Exactly. And they're, oh, I lost 8 pounds. Great. That comes from their muscle mass. That's testosterone and it's maintaining their muscle. It's why men and women are built differently. If you took a man and a woman, the same height, the same weight, the same age, you tried to account for everything except for the XX and the XY chromosome, right? You just laid him on a couch for a day, a man would burn about 400 more calories a day just at baseline. And that's from his muscle mass. So after 30 and 35, why we start to get the abdominal weight gain and our energy levels drop, it has so much to do with the muscle mass part, which then leads to insulin resistance because as we get more adipose tissue and then it just sort of snowballs. And then it's harder for us to build muscle and maintain it because we don't have testosterone as much as men. And we're supposed to be that way, you know, and that's testosterone's a whole other controversial subject, but we're made to be this way. We need that extra fat on our body. You know, when we get really low fat composition, right, our periods go away and that then causes bone loss.
Which tells you that's not the way it's supposed to be.
Right, exactly. We're not built to be that same mass, but it is an important thing to remember for our maintaining weight, maintaining hormones, maintaining energy levels, especially after 30 to 35.
So if someone, because truly every other person I talk to, if they don't say they're insulin resistant, I diagnose them as that. Oh, no, I think you're insulin resistant.
Right.
What the first thing would be diet.
Yeah.
Someone,
yeah.
If there's nothing else physically wrong.
I think the hard part is insulin resistance. Is it at the level of diabetes, right? That's the ultimate that you, despite dietary changes, maybe you may not be able to control it with that because your pancreas is no longer making the amount of insulin that you need to, right? And there's different levels of it. But oftentimes it has a ton to do with us balancing what we're eating. So if you look at a diabetic diet, they're matching their carbs with, they're doing a protein and carb ratio. And so most of us just don't do that. So it really comes down to macros.
Really? And that's, you know, I do know so many people that are counting macros and really, and adding, I have a really good friend that's 10 years younger than me. And she's, you know, really counting macros and also adding protein, really strong about it. I've kind of given up. I'm 63. I had a birthday last week and I'm like, yeah, okay. So, this is not my tell all, but I was pre-diabetic. I am, it doesn't go away. And so first thing she did was metformin for 5 years. And then there's other things, but, we won't have that talk today, but anyway, but it's just, I told my husband, I said, when can we stop caring? Because I really just want to enjoy my life.
Yeah.
So, but I feel like, it really does make you feel better. What it is crazy. What you eat really does affect how you feel or can affect how you feel or sleep. I've struggled with sleep for 15 years. So I've done everything and tried everything. Yeah. Certain things really do affect.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it really is fuel for your body and you can't eliminate any of it, right? We need carbs for energy, for brain function, for fast thoughts, fast action, for exercise, you know, but it can't be all carbs.
It can't be anything. So matching carbs and protein, I mean, being equal with that, because when you try to say, I'm not going to have carbs, or I have done it all. So when you do a low carb or no carb diet, as soon as you eat food, you gain all that weight back plus, which is for a woman, it's a constant, it feels like it's a constant fight. Once you get to that in your 30s, it really feels like it's an uphill battle, but there are, you know,
because it is, it actually, it literally is
fair. It's not fair. It's not fair.
Yeah. But it really, if we focus on the muscle part of it and the protein side, it really is it's going to come back to that every single time.
So that's amazing. And I can't wait to listen to this back again. I can't wait to learn all those big words you have used and with other people. So let's talk about the emotional. What happens? We talked about that's a physical thing that hormones do to us, but emotionally, so some people, you touched on this. Some people don't even realize that they're about to start their period. Some people don't realize they're in menopause. I realized it all.
Yeah.
I started menopause like maybe 46, 47, maybe 48. And by 52, I was done.
Right.
But I felt like that was kind of early, but I see the telltale signs with people, but I struggled emotionally that my going into menopause and you can explain it, but it was some kind of the chemical imbalance that happened to me because I really suffered and struggled with depression for about 5 years there and nothing triggered in my life. Everything was going great. My parents were alive. Nothing was happening bad in my life. So there was no situational depression, and we couldn't put our hand on it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, so perimenopause, there's different definitions of that too. I'm going to use a really strict one that you can kind of define by an actual blood test. But there's other elements around that. It's usually about a 3 to 4 year process. Sometimes shorter, sometimes longer, but the average age of menopause, actually you were right on, Kay, it's around 50, 51 in the US. So it all starts in that zone. It can happen as early as 40 and be considered normal, but the average is closer to 47, 48, and then you're done by 50, 51, 52. And then there's, some outliers there. But so if you think about what happens every month when a woman has a period, essentially, the body, God just made us to think to have babies. So we release estrogen, right? A signal from our brain, a hormone from our brain sends a signal to our ovary to make an egg. And this is where the dysfunction with PCOS comes in because an egg doesn't develop and become mature oftentimes. So, but you go to make an egg that releases and your progesterone levels spike. 72 hours later, when you don't get pregnant, those start to plummet. And about 10 days after that, it'll hit a level that's low enough to trigger you to have a period. And then the whole cycle starts back over. So it's that sudden drop in progesterone that is either, so it's either the progesterone drop or the drop in serotonin that happens with the progesterone. And so some people it's from the serotonin, some people it's from progesterone, and most antidepressants, for example, work on serotonin levels because it is our happy hormone. You get a huge serotonin release serotonin and oxytocin, when you hug someone, for example, right? There's all these articles about you should have a 20-second hug a day or whatever it is. Brent tries to do that with me and I'm not a touch.
I'm not a hugger. So I'm just a hugger. I'm like, stay away, please.
Yeah. We hug and I'm awkwardly. I'm like, are we done?
I knew. Same.
Yep. So it is this emotional response that some people get from that. And so it's either that drop in progesterone or the drop in serotonin. And then, it comes back up when your estrogen rises and you're like, oh, I'm normal again. What just happened? So in perimenopause, why it feels so much more extreme. And honestly, the teenage years, this is where I compare the two because it's the same idea. It's for different reasons. One is the cycle revving up and the other is it fading. But at the end, you're running out of eggs, essentially. So most people, when they're starting perimenopause, they're going to start skipping periods. That's one of their first signs is they have a normal period in January and February, and then they missed March and April all of a sudden. And they're like, oh my God, I'm pregnant at 48. And then their cycle comes back. So what's happening in those months is a cycle that they're going to have a period. They made an egg still. They still had that spike in estrogen and then the spike in progesterone and a drop. The month that they don't, then nothing happens. The brain is screaming at your ovary to make an egg, and the ovary has gone on vacation that month, right? It has signed off and it's not going to respond. So instead of getting the spike in estrogen again, it's actually dropping even lower, and then it drops even lower. So think of it as like waves in an ocean. When you're having your normal monthly period, right, in your 20s and 30s, it's like little waves in an ocean. When it's menopause, you go from having an egg to having nothing at all. And it's these big, massive peaks and valleys. So the delta, right, the peak to the valley feels much more extreme. And then you stay in this low zone where your serotonin stays low also until you finally get a spike back up in that estrogen and progesterone. So that's my only way I've ever thought of to explain it, is think of it as waves in an ocean. When you're in menopause, the waves are more extreme. So you're cresting over the wave, but you're plummeting down, you know, a 30-foot wave instead of a little 4-foot wave.
And that's explaining that for different reasons with, you know, teenagers or with girls that are, you know, hitting puberty, yeah. Why they are like, we can't even make sense of them.
Right. Right.
Life doesn't make sense to them. Just like, yep. When I turned, you know, 50 or whatever, and you get through it and then you think, okay, I feel semi-normal again.
Yeah. You get through it and you look back and you go, what was that? I don't even know what just happened. So.
And they laugh at me at church because when we built this church and I was always hot and I kept telling them, turn down the air and people can wear a sweater. I'm like, they can just bring a sweater. Seriously. It's hot in here.
Easier for them to layer than for me to take it off.
You're so used to saying, ask Kate, she's the thermostat. Even our church is really big now. They'll still ask me and I'm freezing because I don't have hot flashes anymore. And I said, you can't, I'm not your thermostat anymore.
I'm not the thermostat anymore. Yeah.
I won't say names of who they can ask because you know them. I won't throw them under the bus, but it's just, sometimes it feels so unfair. And I know men have the hormones and all that too, but it feels so sometimes unfair what women have to go through in this life. It feels like you get in a rhythm and then it changes.
Yeah. I think it's part of what we have to embrace though. I mean, obviously God made us this way for a reason. And it's the beauty of being able to have children. And we know that that's all linked with it, but it does feel depressing sometimes to think about, but you have to embrace
that. Like, okay, you said, you know, the muscle mass we lose. My mom used to say, she read somewhere, probably in Good Housekeeping, because you just read it before, it wasn't on the internet. She said that she read that the average person gains 1 to 2 pounds every year once they become adult. And that's why I was thinking through all what you were saying earlier in our life. Then you get to be, so there's all things to be depressed about. Then you turn 50, you think, okay, I'm 20, you know, pounds heavier, 40 pounds heavier than I was.
Depressing, the statistic is 3 to 5 pounds for most women after 40.
Oh, see, there's honestly, you know, and then I start this big workout regimen, you know, and I'm outside, I'm going and doing a little weightlifting, and then it just seems to be, I'm like a hamster on a little wheel all the time.
I do think like one thing that we do, what does change as we get older, that muscle part is when we're younger, cardio is so much more important. And when we get older, it's not cardio anymore. It's the muscle, it's the lifting, and it's, which is actually for most people easier. Cause they don't feel like they have to go run for 45 minutes and hurt their knees. And so, you know, the lifting actually is easier. You have to embrace it because it does take, it's slower.
My primary, she's probably your age. She's young. She went to high school here. She's very young. And she says to me, cause I like to walk outside. We live in the foothills of Albuquerque. So it's very hilly. And she said, I said, I don't love lifting. She said, well, the hills actually are building, you know, your thighs, you're getting your muscle tone. And I bought, nobody really cares probably, but I bought these cool little weights for my wrists. And my husband said, you're out there on those roads doing stuff with your arms and people are probably laughing at you. I said, I don't care. Because when you get old, you don't care anymore. But I'm out in the country, so nobody really sees me. But trying to think, because I can feel, you know, saggy arms. And I used to play with my mother's flap under her arm. Now, I got some wings going on and, you know, I smack my boys if they tried to play with my flabby arms right now.
Yeah. No, it does. And I think all that's great. And walk 10,000 steps has, gosh, so many health benefits, long-term, lower rates of heart attack. I think they say if you walk 10,000 steps a day, it adds 3 to 5 years on your overall lifespan or something like that.
That's positive. See, there's something good to talk about.
There you go.
I'm trying to tell myself, my mom's always speaking in my head. I feel like I'm looking for the closest parking place everywhere I go, praying for God to give me a miracle for the first one. And I can hear my mom saying, park far away. You need the steps. You need to walk. Yeah. Take the steps or take the elevator.
Don't take the elevator. Yeah.
I can hear her telling me that. Well, boy, the time goes by so fast. I wanted to talk a little bit before we have some minutes left. So we're not in crazy hurry, but we are coming to the end. If you were to give, we're talking girls, 12, 13 to, 70 year old women. It's interesting though. The metrics to this podcast, the most listeners are 25 to 35. Isn't that crazy? And I'm this age. But maybe they think I know something because I'm older now. But so that's good. But we have all these generations of people that will listen or watch. And it's hard to give advice to one group, but we all share one thing in common. And that's this hormone thing. And that we're women, the women that are watching. What kind of advice? Honestly, I'm thinking, practical tips for managing these hormones. So lack of them or a surge of hormones, but just some practical tips. I love to end podcasts with ways, we can learn from what we just listened to.
That's a good question. I think so much of it is trying to be as in tune with your body as you can, because everybody is going to be different. So trying to track it in a way, there is, for most, if we think of the younger generation, so getting through painful periods and some of the mood stuff that goes with that, the painful period part, a lot of people see if you exercise actually while you're having your period or the days right before your period, that cramps are better. We know that it's what's called prostaglandins, which are these inflammatory markers in our body that cause pain. They trigger pain receptors, is what gets released. So if you offset that with, again, serotonin releases, and which oftentimes, exercise can release for us, or dopamine as well, it neutralizes some of those pain receptors. So staying active, I think tracking sometimes foods, the anti-inflammatory diets around that time, things that, not saying that everybody has a gluten allergy, but gluten is a common inflammatory trigger. For some people, it's legumes or beans. For some people, it's alcohol, whatever it is, all these different things that can be inflammatory. So trying to learn and pay attention and actually recognizing that what you do may actually impact it. And it's not just, oh, this is what my body does and what my body gives me, that may have a role. For, I think, all age groups, magnesium is a wonder supplement. So specifically magnesium glycinate, sometimes you'll find it combined with oxide, which is okay also, but 200 to 400 milligrams of magnesium glycinate at night for period cramps, for hot flashes. It's wonderful for night sweats and hot flashes and sleep. It's great for muscle tension. So it helps with period cramps as well. So magnesium glycinate, if somebody wants something quote unquote natural, it is my go-to.
And I love supplements. I mean, I'm all for medicine. I mean, I all of it, but I feel like there's a place for supplements because that's where medicines come from. A lot of them too.
Right.
Somewhere. But I love that you mentioned that. And honestly, I did that a long time, like when I started menopause, and I haven't taken magnesium in years.
Yeah, it works. It's so good for sleep. It's actually been shown to help mood as well. It helps decrease depression, specifically anxiety, though. It's great. It's one of the things I ask my pregnant moms when they're dealing with, anxious moments, especially. Obviously, we're limited on what they can take. And most of them, even if you told them it was safe, they're not going to want to take it because they're protective, and that's okay. Magnesium's a great option. Something called magnesium calm. It's so good for those anxious kind of feelings, but it's a combo with glycinate, but it's a wonder drug is what I always say.
That's a great tip. And I know people will, really grab onto that, and wow, that's amazing. So that's okay. You have something else really good like that.
I think, I wasn't sure where this was going to go. I'm trying to think what else you know, there's the whole, I'm surprised you didn't ask it. I'm probably opening a bag of worms, so maybe I shouldn't bring it up.
Yeah, ask it. You know, say it, because I have these little notes, but I don't want to miss something good.
Yeah. I mean, there's the question I get probably at least 20% of my day. You know, I have the mixture in my day of pregnant patients, teenagers, but I work in a primarily kind of older, well-to-do kind of area outside of San Antonio. And I have probably half my patient population out there is over 55. And they're cute. They come in and they go, oh, it's the pregnant day. But they are, I love sitting around and talking with them. One of the biggest questions, and I think it honestly does go from all ages, but obviously there's the libido talk. So I don't know if you want to go there.
I get bioidentical hormones, pellets, but
yes,
they're life-changing for me. And it's probably been about 7 or 8 years now that I've done that, because I literally had none.
Yeah. Yeah. I have none. I think is such a common discussion that I have. And I do think that this is a part, again, of what makes us a woman versus a man, and not to get cheesy and go into like the love language talk, but I think especially as we get older, right, we go through seasons of our life, our, you know, sex life or libido when we first get married is obviously really different than when you have little kids at home. And then you have this zone oftentimes of having older kids or empty nesting, and that oftentimes kind of sparks back up again, but then menopause hits. And that's just one of the common things. So one of the things I always tell my patients, and this goes along the tips and tricks, I guess, without going into it too much, but is to evaluate what it is that's their barrier, because 99% of the time it doesn't have anything to do with that they don't want to be intimate. It's that they have something else they're more interested in or stressed about. And so whether that is obviously the relationship itself, that's a whole other part, but finances or the kids, or it's just time in that 30-year-old range, you know, 20s to 30s, physical touch is repulsive for most moms, because you are touched and grabbed and pulled on
my space
constantly. Your body is not yours. And so that's a conversation I've had to have with my husband in that zone of that time, is I was like, the idea of physical touch right now is a repulsive concept. It's not that you're repulsive. It's not that, you know, I don't want to be intimate, but I'm so touched out at this point.
I mean, I know people listening, they're going to be listening to this going, yes, I understand.
And so we had to have that conversation and recognize that that was a partial barrier. The other barrier that is that physical touch, as I said, I'm not a hugger. It's not my love language.
What's your love language?
So it's mostly acts of service.
I do.
So, yep. Take something off my plate for me that I didn't have to ask you to take off. And you're going to like go up a notch big time in my book. But for most men, it's physical touch. And so it's figuring out how to balance those two things. And so it's not a bribery by any means, but my husband knows if I'm putting the kids to sleep and the dishes are in the dishwasher when I get done, there is one less thing for me to do and one less.
I don't deny it. I can't deny it. I'm going to say I've been married 43 years. I can't be bribed.
Yeah.
And nice gift. I mean, I can't be bribed. And I'm just thinking, talking, this sounds like I'm compartmentalizing men and women totally. And I'm not a professional, but this is just how I perceive it. Yeah. But I cannot compartmentalize like my husband can.
I was just going to go into that.
He can compartmentalize. So he can get on, you know, he can get one track mind and not think about all the other things that are happening. And I'm thinking, I've got the house dirty. I've got to go get groceries. We're leaving town tomorrow in reality. And I've got this to do and that. I keep all those together.
Yep. This is the beauty and the curse of women. Once again, a man, you could literally cut his leg off. And if you offered, you know, to anything before you go to the hospital, just put a tourniquet around it. He'd be like, let's go. Yeah. And women, it's why we're multitaskers. It's why, you know, we can talk on the phone and cook dinner and plan the next day and tie your kid's shoe all at the same time. And so we have to embrace that, but you also have to recognize at some point you do have to make a choice, I think, oftentimes, and recognize that as much as physical touch is not my love language, intimacy is important, obviously. And when I start getting agitated and annoyed with all the little things, all that, my husband's so loud. I hear him, you know where he is at all times. He taps on things. Awesome. He's singing, he's humming. He is, you just know where he is in the house all the time. And so it, when it starts to irk me, I realize we probably haven't been intimate recently.
Yeah, no, that's a whole other session.
A whole other session.
Yeah, no, but that's so true, because that means if you're on each other's nerves really bad,
yep,
it's because you're on each other's nerves.
Yep.
And yep. A whole nother, I mean, it's just eye-opening. Wow, you're really smart and you're so eloquent. I'm just listening, thinking, I just hope people are getting as much out of it as me, but just to know what you're saying, to be so honest with us about what our hormones do in our life and the whole aging thing. And I know people are going to be driving their car going, yeah, that's me. That's me.
I'm not. I would say one more little thing. Sorry. Just cause I feel like I've seen so many patients that go, gosh, I wish I would have known that was an option. I had no idea. And they're so scared to talk to their gynecologist about it. If intimacy is uncomfortable or painful, talk to your doctor, because there are some really, really safe options that most people don't realize. And most people just assume it's menopause dryness, and that's not necessarily the truth. And so there's a lot of things to go with that. So there's so many patients who we get things on a better road and they're like, oh my goodness, I wish I talked to somebody about this 7 years ago, before our marriage started to suffer because of it.
I'm 63, but when I started seeing a gynecologist before I got married at 19, it was always a man. And yeah, it would just be uncomfortable to talk about things like that. Now, all my doctors are women. I don't dislike men doctors. I mean, I have one, but now my doctors, but things like that for me are easier to talk to, even my primary, to ask questions and to say the things I need to say that I wouldn't say. Well, now the doctor walks in, and if he's a young man, I'm like, you look like you're 12. I told the doctor, I said, take your mask down and let me see how old you really are, because I don't think you're out of medical school. And this doctor's looking at me like, what? But I just, it's like talking to my son. I can't do this now. So yeah. I looked at the idea that now there are so many women doctors that women can choose to go to, that it really makes it easier on that front. We're very complex creatures, but that complexity, what you've said several times through this podcast, is what set us apart to be able to carry another life inside mm-hmm. of our bodies and to nurture that. And then the nurturing we do for all the years, and you never stop. Right. You know, my oldest son is 40 and I still want to nurture. I still want to mother. I can't, it doesn't go away just because kids grow up and get married and leave home, or leave home and get married.
We want to mother and nurture, not our own kids. I mean, it's in my 8-year-old daughter. She wants to take care of my nephew. It's in us. It's built in us. So whether you're a mom or not.
We need all this to be, I mean, you know, I know that we've talked on a lot of topics, and what I hope that people will do that are listening is, if they have questions when they're finished, if they'll just even reach out to me, I can get you to someone that can give you answers. I mean, I'll find answers. I'll help you find answers, because there's nothing worse than thinking you're the only person going through something, or you're a handful of people, and that what you're going through is not, you know, no one else has ever experienced it. Right. So we hide in a shell, and we just, it gets worse. And there are people, I'm a little different than that. I just say everything. Mm-hmm. And then I don't hold anything in, but that's another podcast too. So you've given us so many tips here at the end. So I'm going to ask you for one more thing and then we're going to close. So for any woman girl to woman, 12 years old to 85, 90, that might be listening to this, what's the most important piece of advice you would give us as women, as it has to do with, hormones, I've just said it so many times, but listening to our bodies, the most important piece of advice you can give someone of all ages to about being in tune with them, with themselves, their bodies?
I think it's, I mean, it's just trust yourself on that, you know, that there, that things we put into our body really does affect us. And in, and maybe just embracing those hormone changes and recognizing it and not saying, oh, it's my hormones, right? Like you said, it's so annoying when men chalk it up to you must be on your period or whatever it is. Embrace. Yeah. Embrace that that's how God created us, that that's how we were made, that there is a purpose behind it, and trying to be in tune with your body enough to recognize that some of it may be our own fault though. And so there are things that we can do, how we fuel our bodies, what we can put into it, that they can maybe influence and affect things. And if not, there are some things like PCOS, for example, that is really frustrating and you don't have much control over, and embracing that also and talking to your doctor about options.
I was going to say that. So, and being not afraid to advocate for yourself. I have a friend right now, and several doctors are trying to find out, you know, really what is going on with her. She's young and you feel like you hit a brick wall all the time, but don't be afraid, because your doctor's also human and needs you to keep saying what you're feeling, thinking, so that you advocate for yourself, and together it's a partnership. That's how I, but she can't read my mind. So I have to say how I'm feeling, and gosh, I wish you lived here. You'd be my doctor. I don't have an OBGYN anymore because I don't have any parts. So we'll just leave it at that.
Well, I will say you should still see somebody.
I do. I have a primary. I do have a primary. I could primary, and I go all the time because I have every other ailment you can imagine. Anyway, that's maybe a geriatric podcast I should have, because that would be a good one too. Heather, honestly, I adore you. I mean, I love your family, your husband, you, and what you do for your community. You have a love for your community that is evident in your service to that church and to the people that go there, and your love for, you know, people having their own community, and then what you do for women, and that you love and care for women and for all, through all ages of their life, not just when they're having babies. I mean, that is an amazing attribute that you have. And I feel it talking to you. You're passionate about what you do. And that is, oh my gosh, it's just a lot of people aren't passionate about what they do anymore. To hear the passion in you is very refreshing for me.
I get to, what was it? Who were we talking to that said, you know, there's four pieces for satisfaction in life. It has to be, and they don't oftentimes all add up when it comes to like careers or, you know, visions and passions. And it's, you know, what you're passionate about, what you have a skill set at, what can make you money, can financially support you, and then what is a calling. And I feel generally blessed that my job is all of those things for me. And so it's unique that I get to say that. I get to wake up every day and I'm excited to go to work. So
I love those four things. I'm going to honestly re-listen to this myself and write them down, because I feel like that's great advice for anyone listening, woman, man, you know, whoever's listening. Those four things are pretty critically important for
satisfaction. From somebody though. So
I just can't remember who. Thank you so, so much for joining me on this podcast. And there probably is going to need to be a part two down the road, because I feel like once there's so much more, but I appreciate that we were able to touch, you know, on so many things. And I'm really grateful to have had you. And you said yes, and you're so busy. And somebody is trying to push out a baby over at that hospital, and I have you here on a podcast. So I'm glad that you got to have an afternoon to talk to me.
Yes, thank you so much for asking me. It's been such an honor. We love y'all.
Thank you so much. Thank you for joining me today on Table Talks. For more content and information about upcoming episodes, please visit my website at kwoodward.com. You can also explore other podcast links and resources there. Until next time.